This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Now, the threat of Russia is one thing, but here in the United States, we don't even understand the damage Russia has already done to our democratic processes. And even to ask about Russian meddling, unfortunately, is seen as a partisan move. The president denounces the Mueller investigation as if it were some sort of devious cover-up for Hillary Clinton's email troubles. And the House Intelligence Committee just concluded its investigation with bitter disputes between the Republicans and the Democratic minority. But in the Senate, on the Intelligence Committee, members are working very hard to maintain at least a functioning bipartisan investigation. The committee's vice chairman is Mark Warner, Democratic senator from Virginia. Few people in Washington are more up to speed than Warner on Russian exploitation of social media and the possibility, at least, of collusion by the Trump campaign. I reached Warner last week at the Capitol. What's been the most eye-opening part of the investigation so far? You've said that this is the most important thing possibly that you'll ever do in your public life. You still feel that way?
I do, David. I feel like maybe the most remarkable thing is how comprehensive the Russian effort was and how off guard in many ways the American government, the American electoral system, our social media companies, we were just not prepared. And a year and a half after the election, I worry that we're still not fully prepared in terms of election security. We still haven't sorted out a new set of rules, regulations, or frankly, frame around social media. And the vulnerabilities we have in cybersecurity are still enormous. And thing we have determined, the three things that there is broad bipartisan agreement on, at least in the Senate, is, you know, Russians massively intervened in our elections. They did it to try to help Trump and hurt Clinton. They ended up then touching at least, if not breaking into, 21 of our state's electoral systems. And they also used social media in ways that were unprecedented to try to build active groups of followers to stir dissension and dissent. And in all three of these areas, they've not stopped. And matter of fact, if you look at what they've been doing not only in America but France, the UK, elsewhere, and you add up all the cost of the Russian expenditures in the French elections, our elections, and the Brexit vote, it's less than the cost of one new F-35 airplane. So I feel like they're getting a pretty good bang for the buck or bang for the ruble on this kind of active measures.
Now, there are a couple of ways to look at the collusion question. One of them is just to think in terms of people on the Trump side being schnooks, being inexperienced and too eager to hear bad things about Hillary Clinton. That's one very highly sympathetic way to do it. The other one suggests something so colossally awful that it beggars the imagination or it goes far beyond any spy novel we've read, which is the idea that the Trump campaign knowingly, and with some intelligence and foresight, cooperating with the Russian government. Do you still think that latter is possible?
David, I'm reserving my final judgment until we've seen all the witnesses we need to see and that we've gotten all the facts. So I'm gonna hold off. I've been under enormous pressure for the last year for some folks who say, hey, shut it down. There's no there there. A la Mr. Trump. There's others who want to try to say, oh, Trump is guilty from day one. I'm not gonna weigh in until we've seen everyone. One of the things that has surprised me, though, is that, you know, here we are spring of 2018, and in many ways we have at least more lines of inquiry in terms of outreach from Russians or folks that have mysterious background to individuals in the Trump orbit than we did, say, a year ago. Now, again, this may all be simply a set of coincidences, or it may be, as you said, there was not the sophistication to realize what was happening. But the fact is, Mueller has gotten, what is it, 2 or 3 guilty pleas already, and, you know, 20-plus indictments, counting a number of Russians in that category who have been using tools like social media and others to intervene in our elections. So there's a lot of material there that our legal justice system has to weigh through. And
are you still getting new documents and evidence?
We are still receiving additional information. We still have got ongoing challenges, for example, with the Trump transition, where they claim a so-called executive privilege that we can't find any reputable lawyer that thinks they've got any validity. But we are still getting some documents there. We're still getting some documents connected with certain individuals who've popped up during the course of the campaign. So, yes, I mean, I'm anxious for this to come to a conclusion, but we owe the American public the full truth.
Can you put a timeline on your work?
I'm not going to put a timeline, but I am hopeful that, you know, every 30 to 45 days we'll be able to put out additional sections of the report. As I said, we've got the first section, the election security, where we've come out with bipartisan legislation, where we got $380 million to beef up election security in this past budget. This was a normal administration. You'd have a White House task force on election security. So instead, we've been trying to push it bipartisan from the Hill. We'll have that first product out in the next week or so.
Can you get interest or cooperation from the White House on at least protecting future elections?
Well, there is, David, where it's that's where we get so darn frustrated. You know, Department of Homeland Security acknowledges that the Russians will be back. Dan Coats, our former colleague, Director of National Intelligence, has acknowledged publicly the Russians will be back and are still back in terms of using social media right now on a host of issues. We had the head of the NSA. All of Mr. Trump's appointees acknowledge this. Yet, and this is their public testimony, they have said none of them have received directions from the White House to make this a priority going forward.
Now, the standard analysis of Putin's motivation is that he really couldn't stand Hillary Clinton. He saw Bill Clinton as the man who helped expand NATO, and he saw Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State encouraging anti-Putin, anti-regime protests, and so on. But what could possibly be the motivation to want to have Donald Trump president, the master of chaos? Russians are anti-chaos. That's certainly characteristic of Putin, anti-chaos, anti-revolutionary. Why want Donald Trump as president of the United States?
Well, I think there are some people that have made guesses in that area, and I'm not going to get into questions around finances or others that certain people have asserted. But I would
You're suggesting that he might be beholden to Russia.
Well, listen, there are press stories on those accounts, but again, I'm not validating or invalidating anything until we're finished with the investigation. But there's obviously been press speculation. But the thing I would might disagree with you on your premise is, I don't think the Russians were necessarily pro one party or another by any means, but they see that chaos in the West is good for Putin, both in terms of reasserting Russia's ascension and also pointing out to his own people, look, see how these democracies, they're not really functioning that well. And if you want America's democracy not function that well, to bring in somebody with Mr. Trump's unusual style, and if you see the kind of chaos and dysfunction that's happened since that time, I would argue if their goal was to further splinter America, get pretty good investment on the ruble side. You could almost have predicted some of this with General Gerasimov, I think, back in 2011, wrote the Russian military doctrine. He was their head of their Joint Chiefs of Staff, where he basically said Russia couldn't compete with the West in terms of tanks and guns and ships and planes, but in the realm of cyber and misinformation and disinformation, and he used the terms that spread like radiation, Russia could be the West's peer or even greater. And if you think about it from a holistic standpoint, we just passed a budget, $700 billion defense budget. Russia's defense budget's about $68 billion. I worry at times we're buying the world's best 20th century military when in many ways conflict in the 21st century may be in the realm of cyber and misinformation. And in those two areas, Russia is our peer.
In other words, you're saying too many aircraft carriers, not enough cyber intelligence expertise.
As a Virginia guy, I'd never say too many aircraft carriers, but I am saying maybe too much 20th century military when our systems are terribly vulnerable to cyber, when we've got this whole new realm of social media and misinformation, and we're still grappling with fake accounts. What happens when we move to 2018 technology where we put David Remnick's face on Mike Allen, another journalist's body, and you've got a suddenly live video stream of what appears to be David Remnick saying things that is not him at all? You know, think about that in the political realm, or think about that if it was a Federal Reserve chairman or a CEO. We're still catching technology, and I don't think we're fully prepared. And if you take the cyber domain, you know, for the last, and this is not just a problem of Trump, this goes Trump, Obama, Bush, you know, we've been afraid of cyber escalation for a decade plus, because if we escalate in the realm of cyber, we're more technologically dependent. And if our systems shut down, much more damage done than, say, if, you know, Moscow goes dark for 24 hours. So we've been reluctant to use a lot of those tools. And instead, we've seen we use them fine against Iran, North Korea, ISIS, you know, small states. But near-peer adversaries like Russia and China, we've been reluctant to engage. And they have, from theft of our intellectual property to now intervening in our most, you know, core democratic process, our elections, they've not been as unwilling to use those tools.
I've read that you communicate over Signal, which is an encrypted app, rather than just regular email or regular texting. Are you an outlier among your colleagues? Do other members of Congress also communicate on Signal?
Well, I don't always communicate on Signal. I go back and forth, but I frankly think I should probably improve my cyber hygiene. I do have dual authentication. I do try to make sure that I'm careful, because we're in an area, in a realm where whether it's having your information broken into, or whether it's having the data you give up willingly on social media, can be used and abused in ways that I don't think most folks would have predicted. And clearly, and I say this with some trepidation, you know, a lot of my colleagues showed how little they understood social media when they interviewed Mr. Zuckerberg.
I think it was that point when Orrin Hatch wondered how Facebook made money that we kind of lost hope.
Not going there.
Now, Senator, you've got, and we all have, a problem of not partisanship, but just something much more extreme than that. If you were to type the words Russia investigation, say, into Twitter, you're confronted with two entirely alternate universes and reactions. Don't you worry that no matter what you find in your probe, a sizable portion of the country, maybe even approaching half, just won't believe it?
You're darn right. I am very worried about that. And it's why I got to try to go the extra mile to keep this bipartisan. I got to believe there's enough Americans who, at the end of the day, if you've got joint agreement from both parties, people will start to accept it. You know, and to your point about if you would have typed in Russian intervention on Google on Election Day in 2016, four out of the first five stories were not Fox News or CBS, they were of Russian origin. It was Sputnik, it was RT News, and it was a series of other Russian fronts that even on Google's algorithms popped up at the top.
It's really
amazing.
That's
a pretty scary notion.
It's incredible. And no, and a related piece of business. It was just reported in our pages that aides of President Trump, possibly might have been aides, but we don't know who that was. Someone hired an Israeli intelligence firm called Black Cube to investigate former Obama administration officials in the hopes of turning up something which would discredit the agreement. Is that kind of tactic consistent with anything you've learned in your Russia investigation, these kind of dirty tricks?
Well, again, we're not aware whether that is true or not. I've seen those same press reports. But it goes back in my mind to respect for rule of law. I think one of the most damaging outcomes of this whole episode is you got a whole lot of folks who are out basically in attacking the integrity of the whole FBI, attacking the integrity of the whole Justice Department, when you've got political figures threatening to fire an investigator like Mueller or Rosenstein, who are career officials, and in those two cases, both lifelong Republicans. That gets America into uncharted territory around respect for rule of law.
Forgive me, Senator. You're being polite in a sense. You're saying a whole lot of folks. You're saying various people. What you mean is President Trump. Do you think President Trump doesn't care a damn for rule of law?
I hope that is not the case.
But you think what?
I'm going to leave it. I've made my statements repeatedly that if, you know, it would cross a red line if he gets rid of the Mueller investigation or indirectly gets rid of it by getting rid of Rosenstein. You know, I hope and pray that doesn't come to pass. I think it would be a disaster for our country. But I'm going to, you know, I'm going to give my colleagues the chance, if God forbid that happens, for them then to make their decisions about how history's going to judge them.
Senator Warner, thank you so much.
David, thank you.
Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, the Vice Chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence.